We're back for another edition of Mormonland, the Salt Lake Tribune's podcast about LDS teachings and culture. I'm Dave Noyce, managing editor and religion editor here at the Tribune. I'm here with senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
Well, President Russell M. Nelson has set off on his first extended trip since becoming leader of the LDS Church. His tour will take him to eight nations in 11 days. Here to discuss the state of the church in those countries is Matt Martinick, an independent demographer who tracks Mormon growth around the globe for the website Cumorah.com and LDSChurchGrowthBlogspot.com. He joins us today from his home in Colorado. Matt, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Hey, Matt, President Nelson's in London today. He's supposed to address members there this evening with the rest of his entourage. The LDS Church has a rich and deep history, of course, in Great Britain, which provided much of the faith's early strength. So how is the church doing there growth-wise and otherwise?
Well, the church and the United Kingdom has generally experienced pretty stagnant growth over the last decade or two. Really has not been no noticeable growth in overall membership. There's only been one new state created in the United Kingdom, like in the past, I think about 20 years or so. So growth has really been really quite slow. Not necessarily that the church has been shrinking in the country, rather it's really just been holding steady. So for example, in 1999, there were about 174,000 members of the church in the UK, and in 2016, there were 185,000, almost 186,000 church members in the United Kingdom. So, I mean, just really slow growth overall. You know, the missions there, I mean, they generally baptize, you know, 100 to 200 converts a year from what Return Missionaries have reported to me. So, I mean, not that it's totally not growing at all, but looking at everything altogether, it's been pretty much stagnant.
Why do you think that is?
For a variety of reasons. One, of course, is that Western Europe is very secular, and traditional LDS proselytism tactics are usually not very effective in countries that are secular, particularly like the United Kingdom, France, Scandinavia. And so reaching the native English, Scottish, Welsh, Irish population has been a challenge for the church to help the gospel be more of what they can relate to, given changes in culture there, as well as religion becoming such a private thing. Also, a lot of the groups that have the most receptive to LDS proselytism approaches, a lot of them are fairly transient, or the church struggles to really make a foothold. So, for example, the church had a really strong stretch of growth among the Slovak community and Sheffield, England, but that resulted in challenges. They ended up having to discontinue the branch a year or two ago. And so it's been hard for the church to really develop communities that are stable and that persist over time among the non-English population there.
Do you think this visit by a Mormon prophet is going to energize the population there? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that it has a lot of good potential for the church to be more in the public eye there. I do think that it can help with, as you say, kind of re-energize things. And like I said, I mean, although the church hasn't really grown there, it's just been kind of, you know, the people that joined the church equal the ones that have died or left the church there. So, I mean, I'm not sure if his visit's really going to change that, but I think there is some potential for you know, for perhaps things to get jump-started a little bit.
So, Matt, you mentioned the church's sort of the challenges it faces in Western Europe. We hear a lot from missionaries talking about that having their most success actually with, like, refugees or immigrants in Western Europe. Is that what you notice?
Yeah, absolutely. And just like I was mentioning with the, they're actually a Roma Slovak community in Sheffield where they had, you know, several hundred that had joined the church in a fairly short period of time. But there's no branch there. The branch discontinued a year or two ago. There is a tiny branch or two in England now. There's also a Portuguese and a Spanish branch in London. So, I mean, there are some places where there's been some inroads made, but it's been very difficult for the church because a lot of those populations are pretty transient. So, for example, with a lot of the Chinese converts, they will join a church and they will go back to China. And so they don't stay permanently in the United Kingdom. And the church has had a lot more difficulty attracting converts that are citizens of the United Kingdom that are Chinese. That's been a challenge for the church, and it really trying to utilize full-time missionaries to create those kind of communities is a real struggle because you have to have the language capability to present the gospel teachings to the people, and those missionaries transfer a lot of information as well. And so it really requires a lot of the local leaders and members to really help those minority LDS communities and the United Kingdom to really thrive and be sustained.
So President Nelson's next stop on this world tour is the Holy Land, specifically Jerusalem. That's a place where proselytizing is forbidden. But right. The LDS Church has a presence there with the BYU Jerusalem Center. And this visit is highly symbolic. What's the state of the church in Israel?
The church is really quite small in Israel. There are only about 300 members combined in Israel and the West Bank from what local members report, as well as what the church has officially released statistics. There are only four branches in Israel and one branch in the West Bank in Bethlehem. That is for Arab Palestinians who have joined the church. There are a very small number of them in Bethlehem. But, yeah, very, very small community. The church has been in Israel for decades. No overt proselytism occurs there. Last I heard, even members of the church who have children that reach age 8, they have to travel outside the country for them to be baptized. The church also retracted its Hebrew translation of the Book of Mormon several decades ago. As part of the agreement with the Israeli government to be able to secure the land and operate the BYU Jerusalem.
Now, the next stop in President Nelson's tour is a whole different story, though. When he goes to Africa, he's going to Kenya and Zimbabwe. You could tell us what's happening in the continent and in those two countries.
Sure. Well, first of all, in Sub-Saharan Africa, all the church right now is experiencing very rapid growth on a magnitude comparable to what the church experienced in Latin America and the Philippines in the 1970s and 1980s. A little less in terms of the actual raw numbers, but nevertheless, the activity rate and convert retention is much, much higher. The thing that is interesting with him visiting Kenya and Zimbabwe is that Kenya is actually one of the countries in Africa that has seen some of the slowest LDS growth. Generally membership there in Kenya increases at a rate of only about 2 to 4% a year, which is much less than in, for example, most countries in West Africa. It's more like about 7 to 20% a year. Or even nearby Kenya and Rwanda last year, church membership increased by more than 50% in a single year. Nonetheless, Nairobi is a center of strength for the church. There are two stakes there now. And, that the temple there will definitely be a big blessing for the members of the church there, considering they have to travel to just Johannesburg, South Africa now to participate in temple ordinances. But like I'd mentioned, Kenya has experienced pretty slow growth compared to other African countries. And a lot of that has appeared to do there's a very negative public perception of the church in Kenya, a lot of false information about the church. Also, the church proselytes only in English, and many of the people there speak English with limited proficiency. They speak Swahili, or they speak Kikamba, or Kisi, or other local languages.
What about Zimbabwe? Are there still tensions, racial tensions in Zimbabwe that affect the church growth there?
The church in Zimbabwe has grown more moderately. So, I mean, Kenya be more like in the slow category of growth, at least the last 5 years or so. Zimbabwe has been more moderate with membership growth and congregational growth over the last 5 to 10 years. And that growth really picked up in about 2010. There were a couple years where membership growth was over 10% a year. Last 3 years in a row, it's been about 6.5%. This summer, the church is dividing the Zimbabwe Harare mission to create a second mission in Bulawayo, which is located in the southwest where the Ndebele people live. But nevertheless, the church has been actually fairly strong in Zimbabwe.
So overall, Matt, what are the biggest challenges for the LDS Church in Africa? I mean,
you know, I think it's probably, well, there's several major challenges. One of them is that the population in most places is very receptive to the church. So one of the challenges is having the infrastructure in place to accommodate that growth and to train the local leadership. That's a major challenge. Poverty, of course, is another significant challenge that the church has grappled with. Of course, ethnic conflict between different groups of people and political conflict is another major challenge. But then again, that's also, I would argue, has accelerated growth in certain areas. For example, in the Ivory Coast, when the second Ivorian Civil War occurred, immediately after that, the church has experienced in the last 5-6 years unprecedented growth. And a lot of that has appeared to be because conditions were just so dangerous there, the church had to be totally self-reliant. The church in countries that's put in that situation, sometimes things sort of dwindle and struggle, but other times they can really thrive and things can really accelerate rapidly with growth, believe it or not.
So, Matt, will any of the structural changes that President Nelson announced at the General Conference help with some challenges in Africa or these other parts of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in Africa, there's a large number of districts, and districts are states, but they operate in places where there are fewer members or where the leadership is less developed. And so in Africa, there's a lot of districts, and in districts, you don't have high priest groups. You can't be ordained a high priest in the district. If you're a high priest in a district, that means you're made a high priest in a state and you move into a district. But also a lot of the congregations, I mean, they struggle with meeting all the leadership needs. So with simplifying the organization of the adult priesthood would really help.
So next stop for President Nelson is Bangalore, India. What do you think about that? The challenges. The church doesn't have a huge presence in that populous nation.
Yeah, India presents some of the most exciting and unrealized opportunities for growth in the LDS Church. India has about 1.3 billion people in it, but there are only about 13,500 members of the church there. Not only that, those members of the church are primarily concentrated in southern India, located, you know, in cities like Bengaluru and Hyderabad, Chennai, Rajahmundry. Those are some of the centers of the church in India. And there are scores of cities in India with a million or more people that don't even have an LDS congregation. Furthermore, there are also several states in India where Christians are the majority or a sizable minority in the Northeast. So there are a lot of opportunities for growth.
You mentioned the new temple in Bengaluru. I'm going to veer away a little bit from Nelson's itinerary and trip because he made an announcement of another temple in Russia. It didn't say where it would be built, but that it would be going there. Did that surprise you? Why or why not?
Yeah, I think everyone was pretty surprised by that. I mean, looking at the number of members in Russia, there's about 23,000. And a lot of countries, when they get to about 20,000 members, they become pretty good candidates for having a temple announced, has been my observation over the years. Speaking with returned missionaries and those familiar with Russia and the church there, Moscow seems like it probably wouldn't be a very realistic prospect just because of a lot of the political issues there. And there are only three cities in Russia that have a stake, Russia, Saratov, and St. Petersburg. And St. Petersburg is right next to Helsinki, so really, all temples in the church, at least once they're operating, have been in a city that has had a stake, so that really leaves Saratov as probably the most likely candidate for where the temple would be built. But really, the church is probably very careful of evaluating, you know, what would be the most appropriate location given changes there with the laws governing religious freedom. And also, the church has had a lot of challenges with the Russian government over the decades, but the Russian government preventing the church from utilizing meeting houses the church has built and not granting permits for the church to use those meeting houses. And that's been a challenge going on since the 90s. It's been, you know, a long-term issue.
So what do you think about his visit to Thailand and Hong Kong? Do you think that by calling Elder Garrett Gong as an apostle, it's going to also produce a lot of energy and excitement in those areas?
Yeah, with Bangkok, again, just looking at all the places he's visiting, they're all that have a temple announced or that used to have it. So temple seems to be a pretty significant theme with his worldwide tour. Thailand, that temple there is going to be 44,000 square feet, is what's started, which would make it the second largest temple on the continental landmass of Europe, Asia, and Africa. So it seems like that temple will probably be sort of a hub for the church in Southeast Asia, for Cambodia, Malaysia, Laos, and Myanmar as well. But in Hong Kong, you know, the church has had a presence in Hong Kong for quite a long time, since the late 40s, early 50s. And the church in mainland China has also grown quite rapidly in the last decade and a half or so, from Chinese joining the church abroad and coming back home. And so there's, you know, it seems like with Elder Gong being called as the first Asian American apostle, that might also help to sort of re-energize and motivate membership in the area and leaders in that area, and perhaps maybe also make the church more interesting to the local population.
One place that a big chunk of the world that Elder Nelson is not going to touch down on, or President Nelson in this trip, is, of course, Latin America, which for decades has been one of the more fertile areas for Mormon growth, spotty at times in different places. How's the church doing there, and will the appointment of Elder Soares to the as the first South American apostle help in, say, Brazil, where the pace of growth has slowed, I think you've noted?
It's important really to take a lot of those membership members with a bit of a grain of salt, because in most countries in Latin America, only about 15-25% of members are go to church on a regular basis. In some countries, it's as low as 10%. So, you know, that's something that the church has struggled with for decades in those countries. And the announcement of Elder Soares as an apostle and the first Latin American apostle is definitely significant. And, I mean, there has appeared to be many potential leaders that could have been called as an apostle that are Latin American for decades, but one of the important things to keep in mind is that the church in a lot of those countries have struggled with developing local leadership. And so if all people out of those countries to serve international positions, that can create challenges with the need for local leadership in those countries, or in particular congregations or stakes or missions. So you know, the church has continued to grow steadily in Latin America, some countries more than others. There's also been some significant improvements in sacrament meeting attendance, from what returned missionaries have noted, to the point where a lot of the congregations are about close to being the same size as American congregations, which historically has not been the case. They've been much, much smaller than what you see in North American wards for church attendance.
Ken, I noticed one of the temples is also Managua, which is Nicaragua's first, so the church is doing better there, or?
Yeah, Nicaragua was previously the country with the most members without a temple. So prior to the announcement a couple of weeks ago, Nicaragua had about 100,000 members of the church and no temple. And Nicaragua is also the last Spanish-speaking country in Central and South America to have a temple announced. Of course, there's a couple in the Caribbean that are Spanish-speaking, don't have temples, but the church in Nicaragua has had a very different history than other countries in the region. in terms of a lot of the political issues in the 1980s. There was a period of time where the church there was pretty much under control, and the government seized all the church's property. And then when the church came back in the late 90s, tens of thousands of people joined the church in a matter of a couple of years. And before that time, there were only a couple thousand members, really. And it took about 10 years or so for there to be a stake organized in Nicaragua. And today there's now more than 10. So, I mean, it seems like it's been slowly having more active members, more leadership development. But it's taken a long time because the activity rates there are not very high.
So, briefly, one last question. What are you most looking forward to seeing or tracking from this trip of President Nelson?
I am going to be most closely interested, or most closely watching, what President Nelson, how he engages the local members and leaders in these countries, and how he adapts what he feels like they need to learn and to know to help the church succeed in their individual country.
Well, Matt Martinick, thank you so much for bringing a little deeper understanding to this historic trip. And your amazing work in tracking how Mormonism is doing around the globe.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Peggy, thanks for your coverage.
Love to be here.
You can follow this story and more at sltrib.com. Until next time on Mormonland, have a great week.